Welcome to the Real Short Box. My name is Kevin.
I don't know how to respond to that. That was beautiful and frightening all at once. I guess I'll just be Donald.
Be Donald. And I'm Jarrett, and I don't have the dulcet tones that Kevin does, so fuck it. Let's go. Let's do it.
Let's get this done.
The reason why I'm so excited is because, fellas, we are talking about one of our favorite comic book companies that this year is celebrating its 25th anniversary, and that is Image Comics.
Yeehaw!
Image, as they call it in France.
Image Comics is great. It makes my pants tight.
As it should, because where else are you going to find creativity in this wonderful comic book industry?
The dream of the 90s, man. That's what I...
The dream of the 90s, yeah. But it continues today in the second decade of the 21st century and beyond.
Which is a good reason to note that this is actually, we've already planned this, this will be part one
of
a two-part series.
Because we can't do Image Comics justice in one podcast.
Right.
Oh, no.
No. So, Kevin, you're going to give us some of the history. We're going to fill it in with some quips and jibes.
Yes, sir. Let us start. Now, 1992 was an interesting year, an exciting year for pop culture. You had alternative rock known as grunge in some circles, ruling the airwaves.
Seattle, baby.
Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden. You had Whitney Houston. You had hip-hop coming into its own. You had Crisscross.
Whitney Houston was not part of the grunge movement, I can firmly say.
Well, I did not say that.
I also put her in the 80s. So, yes, she was prevalent in the 90s.
You know, with the bodyguard.
Which is what I think about Whitney Houston.
Oh, yeah.
Brother, that is inappropriate. I don't like that. That's inappropriate.
Just be prepared, guys. We our budget went sky high. We have a little... We have a noisemaker here.
Oh, by the way, do you have a problem with Crisscross? That famous song Jump came out in 92 as well.
No, I'm good. I'm good with Crisscross.
Did you say Crisscross?
Yes.
Because I heard they made a lot of money, huh?
Yes.
Wait. All right, see, guys, when you're doing these sound effects, you have to read. It's actually the one above the other one. So, wait.
Yep.
So they made a lot of money. See, what I did was an LLL. All right, we get it. They made money, dude. Jesus.
Boys to Men? You can't diss Boys to Men.
No. But what does this have to do with comics? I know you're setting the vibe.
I know.
But get to the comics.
The comics? Wait a minute. You don't remember the USA Dream Team?
Oh, yeah, I do remember. That's when life became unfair for the rest of the world.
It sure did.
They're like, hey, guess what? We'll take all the amazing players of the NBA, put them on one team. Against your guys, you know, that play basketball too, you know, when they're not in their communist countries and all that stuff.
And we'll wipe you out.
Yeah.
And that's segues into the comic book dream team of seven special men who would leave Marvel Comics. Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane, Jim Valentino, Mark Silvestri, Eric Larson, and Willis Portacio. These men would leave Marvel and leave those wonderful X-Men books that you and I, Jarrett, love so much behind. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe it was 40 of the top 100 books that were selling at the time. Maybe even more than that. Maybe even 45 of the top 100 selling books at the time for Marvel were by these seven artists.
Oh, these guys were the creme de la creme.
They were the creme de la creme.
They were the first time, in fact, that a book by... the first book of this artist, like the first time Jim Lee did X-Men, like that book would go for something. Like you could find, that was a hard book to get. I think it was like X-Men 248
Still like the number one best-selling comic, right? That first X-Men?
Yes.
X-Men
number one sold over 8 million copies.
Sold over 8 million copies?
Yes, sir.
That's insane.
I don't think anyone will ever break that record.
I don't think so, too, particularly because the market's shrinking.
Yes.
It's not expanding.
Yes, it's very niche now.
Even with the movies, even with the movie boom, it's still not expanding.
Except for one particular book, which we'll get to in part two.
All right.
That has kind of been like the exception to the rule.
Okay.
Stay tuned
for that.
For part two.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
But I'm glad you bring that up, because Jim Lee selling over 8 million copies of X-Men number one. Rob Liefeld sold over 5 million, well, not personally, of course, but, you know, sold over his book for over 5 million copies of X-Force number one.
Which, if you do remember, was the five polybagged issues. Each one had a different X-Force trading card.
That was the difference between that and the X-Men comic. The X-Men comic had five different covers.
That all connected.
And the X-Force had five different trading cards in the cover. And no different cover.
And it's funny you mention it because the first person to ever sign a comic book for me back in 1992, when I was a little kid and back in New York at my comic shop, was Jim Lee. He came in and signed my copy with the multiple covers of X-Men number one.
And you bet our 13-year-old asses were like, I have to get them all.
Oh, yeah.
You can't just have one. Like, getting one, I remember, was just pointless. It was like, yeah, it's cool, I got that X-Men number one, but if I don't get all five of them, then life doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
You know, or they're worthless.
I think, you were lucky growing up in New York, you know, like in a big city.
Right.
I was a small town. I think I got Dan Davis, who, nothing against Dan Davis,
right.
But, like, that was big for me. Like,
right.
I found a comic that he had worked on, and he was there signing. And I was like, yeah.
And this is what you said to him when you met him, too. You're like, you know, I wish I was from a big city. I got, like, the big guns like Jim Lee, but I get you, Dan Davis.
And then I gave him a hug.
And he's like, I needed that, brother.
And then also, Todd McFarlane,
yep.
Before that, in 1990, Spider-Man number one, which is also another multi-cover, you know, spectacular. Like, I think it was like, God, like 13, 14 covers of that. It was like ridiculous. I remember like, you know, A, the B cover, the I cover.
Oh my God,
there's like
right.
a black one, a green one, a platinum one, a gold one. It was just out of control.
And multiple prints, too.
Multiple prints, too.
This is where that was actually happening for the first time, too.
Yep.
These comics were selling out. They were having second and third prints, which
yep.
was like unheard of before.
Yep, 2.5 million copies of that one was sold. And of course, McFarlane, I believe, wrote as well as drew that particular book.
The Spider-Man?
Spider-Man number one, yeah, I believe.
Did he really?
That book, yeah.
That
and then,
one.
Because before it was him and Dave Michelin.
Yes, Dave Michelin.
Were doing the Amazing Spider-Man,
yes.
which introduced that kind of popular guy, Venom.
Oh yeah,
that
Eddie
some
Brock.
People talk about every now and then.
How long did McFarlane write that Spider-Man book for?
I have to say, it could have been no more than a year, year and a half.
I think it was
most.
Like 13 issues.
Okay.
At most.
But
it wasn't long.
Well, I remember, like, I thought at one point, like, Larson took over for him
I think
on
you
that.
You might be right.
Like,
I
doing the art.
Right.
I don't know if he did the writing, but he did the art.
I think you might be right on that. Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure. Like, that Spider-Man was my jam, like, reading it.
Yeah.
Like, that was the only Spider-Man book I liked.
Mm-hmm. That was like, and, I mean, I don't agree with you. I liked multiple Spider-Man books.
Well, it got me into Amazing
Spider-Man.
That was like my segue book because for Spider-Man, it got me into Amazing Spider-Man.
Right.
And then I think it was Spectacular.
And right. Web.
And then eventually Web, which kind of then just fizzled in my mind because Web, I think, was my least favorite.
Well, Web was kind of like the bastard stepchild of Spectacular Spider-Man, which was second,
was
to,
second book
to Amazing Spider-Man.
And then the third was like Web, and then
right.
They Superman the shit out of Spider-Man at one point.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Batman, whatever you want to consider. I mean, you have multiple.
Well, Batman could survive on multiple books for
yes, true.
For a long time. Superman, not so much.
But McFarlane was, and once again, those books of like the first Todd McFarlane Spider-Man, the first Jim Lee X-Men, like that was the first time it was like, I need to get this book because it's the first time this artist did it who's
this
a superstar.
This is what made these artists like absolute superstars, where especially with the modern day media we live in, they were blown up. They're on cable TV. I mean,
right, that's true. And it was like, it would be like getting an autograph from Leonardo da Vinci,
yeah,
you know,
right.
for us anyway.
Yeah,
it was huge.
Liefeld, I mean, such a young man at the time, like 21, 22, 23. He was on Dennis Miller.
I think it was 21. Yeah.
Spike Lee commercial.
The famous
Levi's
commercial, which
yep.
I'm sure you could probably YouTube
it,
right?
Easily.
Yep, you can.
I remember that was, for me, was the first time I was like, where I saw, because I was like almost a closeted comic book fan where I was, because a lot of kids weren't into, it was a lot of jocks and stuff like that. They weren't
into. Same small town.
Yeah,
I
small
mean,
town.
I had to, yeah.
Like if I had a good friend and he came over, I'd be like, look, man, I got to take you somewhere. I know you're not into it, but I have to go.
Take you in the corner.
I'm going to the comic shop. Come with. And they'd just be like, oh, that's cool, man. Like whatever. But it was still like, I never had anybody that I would talk to about it. If I met a person that I talked to about it, we'd
you
be
whisper,
like.
You whisper.
I had one friend that, and he was considered like to be nerd level. And I'm Pat Calder. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Pat.
I'm still friends
and
with him.
And Dan Davis.
I'm still, yeah, sorry, guys. I'm still friends with Pat to this day. But Pat and I were like we were the only two people that I knew that were so into comic books. And
right.
And Pat kind of got me into it more. I always need a competitor, like the Lex Luthor to my Clark Kent, so to speak, Superman. And Pat was it for me. He was somebody that we both love comics, but like for some reason I was very competitive in anything I ever collected. Do you remember those Muscle Men?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
The little pink Muscle Men?
Yeah. Like if I had a source, I found like at one point I found that Big Lots of all places would get them in.
Uh-huh.
And they would get them in these clear garbage can plastic containers.
Right.
And it'd be filled with like multicolored Muscle Men. Not just the pink ones.
Well, that was very ahead of its time.
I know, right? So I would buy them there.
Right.
And like, but I wouldn't tell anybody my source. That way I could trade,
right,
you know, and get like good stuff.
Right.
And so like one day my mom told my friend Derek that was where I got my Muscle Men. And he looked at me and he was like, and you could see it in his face. He was like, oh, really?
And you were like, Mom.
It was over for me. Like with the trading. So after that, when he left, I tore into my mom. I was like, how dare you?
Mom,
do you know who I am?
You know? There's not many special things I have in this life. My Muscle Men in at Big Lots was something fucking very special to me, and you ruined it.
Yep. So I apologize to Big Lots, Derek Waldron, Dan Davis, and Patrick Calder. All you guys, I apologize now. And we'll continue on. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
no problem. So at this time, getting back to what was going on, is that you have a situation where all these books are selling like hotcakes,
mm-hmm.
and as you know, these artists are just work for hire. You know, it's been the model that's been established by DC and Marvel since the very beginning.
And as you briefly said, these guys have cornered the market on all the X books, X Men, X Factor, even X Four. I mean, everything. They had that like lockdown.
And
Spider-Man.
They were beautiful books. Some of them looked very pretty, but they were
very
just
flashy.
They were just written by trash writers like Fabian. Fabian, that son of a bitch. He couldn't write himself out of a paper sack. And they needed that beautiful art to just bring that level
listen
up.
Listen to Donald's criticisms, Fabian. I think you did a fine job, sir.
Fabian's got a bottle of Wild Turkey right now and he is seething. He's like, I'm gonna get you. It's on, Donald. It's on.
Anytime he wants to come on for a debate, I'd be happy to have him.
It's on, Don.
I'll praise you, Fabian. Don't worry about him. But anyway, getting back to the point here, what we have is a situation where they're making a ton of money for Marvel. I mean, there were t-shirts, a lot of merchandise being sold, and with McFarlane in particular, it was pissing them off.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically just wanted just a little, you know, a little extra, a little taste of the action. Hey, you know, I helped you guys produce this. Give me a taste. And then, you know, it's Marvel's corporate. They're like, no, you know, you work for us and deal with it.
Yeah, this is our property. Your art is now owned by us, and we will put it on whatever we want.
And worse enough, your creations
are ours. So if you
created
Venom and Carnage, guess what? We own them.
You created that Deadpool guy?
We own them.
Yeah.
We need a Destroyer Duck. Now more than ever.
So basically, McFarlane, along with Jim Valentino and Rob Liefeld, and they decided that, you know what, let's have a meeting with the guys. Let's see. Let's try one last shot at trying to get a little taste of the action.
So they all got together to do that.
Yeah, a few of these guys got together and they said, look, you know what, can we get something together? You know, can we do something? And, you know, they basically were told no. So they decided, okay, they decided to meet in New York. To basically turn in their resignations. So they met up with Jim Lee, and they didn't think he would come along. It's like, hey, you know, Jim Lee was kind of seen as like the company guy, the company man. And Jim decided, yeah, you know what? I'll come along too. Because McFarlane was kind of smart about this. Him and Liefeld, they figured if we can build this up and bring as many people as possible, when we leave, it's going to like cause a great, you know, a great ruckus.
They tried to Jerry Maguire the shit out of it.
Yes.
You know, I'm leaving. Who's coming with me?
Yes.
And they actually got people to come with
them.
Right.
Instead of that one lone secretary.
Right.
Exactly. It worked. So basically, you had all seven guys. They said, you know what? We're leaving. And, you know, the Marvel people didn't think it was, you know, they didn't buy it. Like, oh, whatever. All right, you'll be back in 6 months, so whatever. And then what they decided to do was they went to DC to let them know that, hey, we're not coming to work for you either.
Yeah, that was kind of... That just seems dumb.
Well, that's like the big wagon dicks right there. That's when they're just like, you know what?
We're sticking it to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Because basically at first, you know, according to what they said, you know, they went to DC and they think, oh my God, we're getting Jim Lee, we're getting this, we're getting that, you know. But it turns out, no, we're just letting you know that we're going our own way. We're not working for you either.
They took a meeting with DC to tell them they won't be taking meetings.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Okay, you know.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your free Diet Cokes we gave you, you assholes.
Yes. Ugh.
And so, yes, we'll validate your parking.
That's nice.
Yeah, that was nice.
So after that, in February 1992, they officially formed Image Comics. And what's interesting, when I researched, they got the name from an Andre Agassi commercial for Canon cameras, where he's talked about image is everything. And since, you know, early 90s, you know, things were getting a little flashy, Rob Liefeld and company, they took to that. I said, yeah, that's a good idea. What a car company image.
And that's so 90s too, Agassi. I mean, just like even using like a commercial from Andre Agassi.
Indeed. And the logo, the I logo was created by Hank Canals. He actually created the I logo. The
famous Who's he? Image.
He is he's like an editor, a little artist.
He's just a guy.
He's a guy, you know.
Well, like, I mean, like,
hey, everybody, I'm Hank Canals.
There's like seven or eight of these big, seven, right?
Yeah.
Like of the biggest artists known to man, and they can't even create their own logo?
Hey, you know, you got other buddies.
That just blows my mind.
Like a college buddy of one of them.
Yeah,
like, hey,
you'd have to be.
Can I have something? Remember you said you'd hook me up, and you never hooked me up at Marvel?
Right. Well, you're just not good enough, but you can do our logo.
Can you do like an upside down exclamation point, but thicker?
Yeah.
Then you got yourself a job.
But basically, what they did during that first year in 1992, they set up a brief alliance with Malibu Comics. You know, for 1 year, they helped publish. They published their books just to get them started.
Right.
Get them going.
We did.
We didn't talk about that in our Malibu Comics.
Right. We did do a Malibu Comics podcast. Yes.
Right. Dave Albrecht.
Check that out, please.
Yes. Dave Albrecht, the publisher, the co-publisher, was very, no problem. Hey, come on in. You know, we'll help get you started.
That's nice, by the way.
Yeah, that's like a super cool move.
Yeah.
Malibu, you guys are solid.
Absolutely.
I don't think they exist anymore. But
Malibu, you guys were solid. And I'm sure right now, ones who are living and breathing are still really good guys. And the ones that are dead, God rest their souls.
Right. But anybody from Malibu that wants to come on and talk about Image or Malibu, we're happy to have you.
Yeah. Heck, we'll talk to anyone from Eclipse.
Yes, we would. Just anybody.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Anybody. Hey, homeless man who found a way to listen to a podcast and likes comic books, you want to talk to us? We'll talk to you.
Yeah. And talk about how you probably go to the library to read books.
And shit, I would do that.
Yeah.
If I was homeless, I'd be all about it. They have some great graphic novels.
Well, you can use their bathroom.
Yeah, use your bathroom and read all their comic books.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? I'm going to go be homeless tomorrow.
When I first moved out here, I had like zero cash, just enough like to live on, and I didn't have any frills, like special things I could spend money on. So I would, I got a library card, and I would order online. I would go in and I would special order in comic books to come in so I could read them, like graphic novels.
You'd have the library order them so you could read. Oh, wow.
Yeah, they would. Well, they would order them. They would pull them from the downtown library because that was like the biggest library in the area.
You were like, I want to check that book.
Right, and they would ship it to my branch in North Hollywood, and then I would check it out. Then when it came in, they'd notify me. I'd go get it, and then I would read it in like a day or two, and then take it back and go get another one, and that's how I did it.
This is the life, people.
Yeah.
Now, when Image Comics was formed, the seven guys had to, you know, set up the rules of the road, and what they did was very unique. They decided that everyone owns their own property.
This is their mission statement.
That's their best part of their mission statement. Okay. And one very important thing that they hold up to this very day, as well as ownership of your own comic, Image only takes a flat fee for each comic itself. Small flat fee and a fixed percentage of each collection or digital comic, and that is it. You own everything else. We just take a small fee. You're good. So right. someone like a Kirkman, most of that money is his. The copyright's his.
But now
he gets to negotiate his own movie deals, TV deals. Everyone,
that's,
you know,
great.
You know, you.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
You get to go. You know,
well, that was,
we stay out of that. That's part of the deal.
Which was exactly the point of Image.
Yes.
Was creator owned
independence.
Independence.
Yep.
But now, so what I'm wondering though, in the beginning, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but so you had these guys that were Image, and they all have their. So they're kind of getting also a little bit of the other guys' money though too, right? Because if they're the heads of the board too, right? So they have like, you know, for instance, Todd McFarlane has Spawn. He gets all his Spawn money, and they get their little percentage. But then doesn't he also get a percentage of that too? Because he's part of.
I guess the way
the
it works.
Picture?
Yeah, you would have to think that together.
Well,
like,
I think all that percentage goes into
the
day to day expenditures
operations,
yeah.
And that's
right.
The whole point. You know, cover day to day operations.
Right, so you don't have to worry about it. They probably broke it down to the point where they're like, okay, we need this much, so let's get this percentage from everybody, so we're covered, we're more than covered, just in case something
right.
happens.
Cover administration, cover legal costs, things
right,
like that,
and then
trademark.
You know, yeah, and if we have a nest egg or whatever extra stuff, we can use that towards advertising or, you know, billboards or I don't know, whatever they were thinking at the time.
But meanwhile, you can sell your Spawn bongs, your Spawn underwear. It's all yours.
It's all yours. And that's the beauty of it all. So we get into the early part of 1992 and the guys are feeling the pressure. And by the way, when they left, Marvel stock dropped. It was a big shock to the system. I actually do kind of remember as a kid, like seeing like CNN, them talking about it, like how there was a big deal when these guys left.
That's crazy.
Well, like who's going to do these books now?
Right. Who's going to do these books now? It was kind of like.
Dan Davis.
But in early 92, the first book that was released was Youngblood. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of pressure because they had to come out, you know, with guns blazing, because if they didn't, you know, Marvel and DC were just waiting for them to fall flat in their face.
Now, and also, if I remember right, wasn't it like there was all the excitement for the books to finally come out? Youngblood came out like much earlier than the other ones, right? Because then it was like they came in like groupings, though. It was like I remember going in and like, you know, like with Cyberforce number one, all, you know, a whole bunch of them at once. But Youngblood was the one where everybody was like, snatch that shit up.
Yep,
like,
I believe it sold about 500,000 copies, and it was the highest independent, you know, comic ever sold until, of course. Until. Mr. McFarlane's famous Spawn number one came out and sold well over 1 million copies, and that, I believe to this day, that is still the highest
independent comic
sales.
Sales, yep, you're right. And a big quick thing on that is with McFarlane is growing up, I wasn't, and I've discussed this before, I wasn't the richest kid on the block.
Mm-hmm.
So that is where like my parents got creative. And one of the creative things they did was the Home Shopping Network. Believe it or not, the Home Shopping Network, like...
There's a dragon on the blade.
That's true. They had that. Yeah. But they also had, like, comic book sales.
Right.
They did, like, comic book sales. And one of them that they had was the McFarlane Image Spawn box.
Oh, really?
Yes. It was a short box, but it folded and like you had the tab where it would shut, you know, and you could like shut it. It didn't have like a pull off lid, like a short box, but it was short box size.
Short box. Okay.
And it was completely covered with an image of Spawn. And it had like the symbols on the sides and like a big picture of Spawn on the side and stuff. And it was badass. And inside was a lot of the early Image books.
Oh, that's cool.
Youngblood number one, Spawn number one.
That was a whole package deal.
Yeah, and I think one of them was like autographed by one of the artists and stuff.
Right.
And I remember sitting there, and my parents are like, because they were Home Shopping Club gurus or something. They loved watching it. So I was looking at it, and I was like, I think I was drooling. And my mom was like, is that something you would like, son? And I was like, And, like, my dad was like, oh, you think the boy wants that? And I was like, I want it!
The boy wants!
I want it so bad! So, what you could do with the Home Shopping Network is you can make payments.
Right.
That was why my parents liked it, because they didn't have the money to outright buy things a lot of the times.
Right.
So they would put stuff on layaway, but you can't go to a grocery store and put, or, you know, like Walmart's or wherever it was at the time, Rinks or some nonsense, and put comic books on layaway. It just wasn't a thing.
Or a tab or anything like that.
But yeah, but you could with the Home Shopping Network. So I got some really cool shit over the years from the Home Shopping Network from my parents making payments.
That's awesome.
And that Spawn box was one of them. And it's great. I still have it at home in Ohio in my old bedroom at my parents' place. And it's amazing, guys.
You're like, Mom, remember the whole Big Lots tobacco with the muscle men? This could make things right.
Right. Yeah, you could be forgiven. If you did this for me, Mom.
Now, Youngblood was like, I remember right out of the gate, that was the first book. Everybody had to snatch it up. And I'm just going to go in a little bit about that story, because it's actually a pretty interesting. The team itself, I'm not going to lie, they were pretty vanilla. A lot of these characters, they were creative owned, but some of them were way more thought out than others. And I kind of felt Youngblood, since these are artists, a lot of the stuff looked cool. So that was like, it was all eye-catching. And Youngblood, that cover was very eye-catching. It had the team busting out.
Some people compare Rive Liefeld, it's like, they call him like the Michael Bay of his era, interestingly enough.
That makes sense. I can completely see that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, here, I as a person, I've heard some things that are sketchy about maybe the way he does business and stuff like that. But his art will always
tickle. His energy.
His energy and his art will always tickle a little part in my brain, in my little 90s brain, my little 13-year-old brain that will be like, I like Rob Liefeld. You know, at least, like, I like Rob Liefeld, X-Force, New Mutants, and some of the Image stuff. Some of the, you know, Youngblood was fun. Hey, I remember.
We're basically, like, the children fans of Image comics.
In totally. Well, Youngblood, though, was this, they were a government super team. Their members included Shaft, who's actually the opposite of Shaft from the movies. He was like a ginger, pretty much. He was a white ginger who shot bow and arrows. He was an FBI agent. There was Bad Rock, a teenager who was transformed into a living block of stone. And there was Vogue, a Russian fashion model with purple and white skin. And then there was Chapel, who was like their Punisher. He had, like, the skull on his face.
I love Chapel.
Oh, Chapel was like, actually a character they made more interesting in Spawn.
Spawn,
yeah.
That's where they kind of were creating the world. Then you had Die Hard, who to me was, like, Deadpool kind of. He was, like, a Captain America Deadpool look, but he was just, like, a super soldier.
That's kind of funny, because I watched a video where Stan Lee was interviewing Rob Liefeld,
mm-hmm.
and it was on YouTube. You guys can look this up easily. And
like old Rob Liefeld or modern?
23-year-old Rob Liefeld.
Okay, wow.
And he's right there in front of Stan Lee. He's creating Die Hard. He's like, I'm just going to do a doodle here and see.
And he starts creating him?
Yeah, and this guy, I'm going to call him Die Hard and stuff. So he creates him right in front of him and then uses him later for his own, you know, stuff. Right. Which is very cool.
Well, Youngblood, the look was obviously...
If Stan only knew.
The look was so Liefeld. You had, you know, the receding hairlines, the metal arms. He loves his metal arms, and of course his pouches.
Yeah, those big blocky, like, yeah. Really. Oh,
everybody was super blocky.
Super yeah.
The interesting thing, though, is two parts of the origin of Youngblood. They actually were created in 1987 as a one-shot in Megaton Explosion comic.
That's correct.
Was that from Kitchen Sink?
I'm not positive about, but possibly. It was the old Megaton stuff, whatever that old Megaton... I think Savage Dragon made his debut in that and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was a one shot. And then, so later in 1992, when Youngblood, the team for Image came up, they were actually a scratched idea that Rob Liefeld was going to write Teen Titans, but he was going to do his picked team of Teen Titans.
Uh huh.
So, what was it? Shaft, the arrow guy, was going to be Speedy. Vogue was going to be Harlequin. And Combat, who was kind of like this alien-looking guy, was actually supposed to be a Kundian, which is a DC alien race character. So pretty much what he did was just go like, all right, well, I'm taking all those ideas and kind of maybe pseudo-designs and just transferring it over to Youngblood.
He will do this
yeah.
throughout his career,
and exactly, right. So the thing about Youngblood, though, that was, I guess that was actually ahead of its time and also of the time, was they're almost like... reality superstars, the team themselves. They were like this government kind of superstar team,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of cool. And that today would actually still be relevant. Like
right.
if we had a superhero government team or even people that could do cool tricks and like save our, you know, asses every now and then, we would make them like reality stars. They would each have their own show.
Absolutely.
And I believe he wrote it. It was much like I'm sure we'll get into with Image. A lot of these guys, since it was creator-owned, they were kind of self-governed by themselves. So some of these yes. books, this was the first time as kids, we weren't getting books
on
monthly
time.
On time. And we were like, what the hell is
Except
going
Spawn.
On?
Except for Spawn.
Except for Spawn, okay. And I think, and Savage Dragon
Savage
was
Dragon.
Pretty
yeah,
damn consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. Isn't it interesting that those two are still...
Very consistent and
still
around.
Right.
Yep.
And now you can do your research on Youngblood if you're interested in the team. They've come back. They've gone back and forth. The interesting thing that I found out, though, was two things. One, in 1993, Liefeld, he would start soliciting writers to do the work. Because, no offense, even though he was writing and doing the art for the original Youngblood books, he's not a writer. And I think he would even tell you that. He's not a writer. He's an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was soliciting other artists. He had Kurt Busiek do what was potentially a Youngblood Year One. And I guess he scripted these stories, and I don't know how fleshed out they were. And allegedly, Busiek said, look, if you're going to do this story, just say I plotted it, because that's what he felt comfortable with. But when it came time to market it, Liefeld said, written by Kurt Busiek. And Busiek was like, I don't want anything to do with you ever again. And there's been a controversy of that. And then another interesting thing was, I didn't know this, Alan Moore.
Yes.
I knew he did Supreme. I knew he went with that character. But
yeah.
I didn't know Alan Moore did some Youngblood, which was very interesting
yeah.
to me. To go, no offense to Liefeld once again. But to go from you know, Rob Liefeld writing your thing to Alan Moore writing your team is pretty is a huge jump.
Right, and some people probably were upset at him because, like, how do you go from Swamp Thing and Watchmen to
I don't know if anybody was really upset with him so much as they were just surprised. And I think the big thing was is that Alan Moore saw this as, like, look, these guys are whatevers, and I can mold this clay however I like.
Right.
One of the big things he did with Supreme was he was like, look, I'm going to throw out everything that happened before this point, and I'm just going to do my thing, and I'm going to do
I'm going to tell my Superman story.
Basically, yeah. It was all, and I'll cover that, and in fact, I, you know, it's one of the things.
I'm going to Watchmenize it.
Right.
That I
Watchmenize it.
One of the big things that I talk about. I'm going to
slap a beard on it.
Is I talk about the Image ripoffs.
Right.
So one of them would be Supreme. He was a big ripoff of Superman.
Right.
His powers are indistinguishable from one another. Other than early on in the series, Supreme didn't mind killing people.
Right.
And that kind of changed when Alan Moore came in and took over. And he saw this for what it was. He was like, okay, so this Supreme guy is a complete ripoff of Superman. He knew that.
But he kills.
But he kills, and he was like, well, I'm not going to do that anymore, because he wanted to make him more Superman-esque. So here's the greatest part. He created characters such as Darius Dax, which was Lex Luthor's ripoff.
Of the alliteration, too.
The Lois Lane-like love interest was named Diana Dane.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So he's doing D alliterations, too.
Right. And an alter ego for Supreme was a comic artist.
Dirk Diggler.
Right. And that's not, there was also a Supreme to, there was actually a female Supreme called Suprema.
Right.
And she was created to basically equal out what Supergirl is to Superman.
Right.
Then there was Kid Supreme, and there was, Judy Jordan then, which matched Lana Lang. So basically Alan Moore was just like, well, I know that this is a complete ripoff of Superman, so fuck it.
Right.
I'm going to just have fun with
and
it.
And I thought it's like, create her own. I get all the...
Yeah, right.
And just give me
just cash. Just sell books.
Thanks for the cash, Alan.
Yep.
So then go on. So what...
And let us not forget the other books that came out that year. You had Wildcats.
Right.
Wildcats, which was also big.
That was a big one. Even had a... I think that was the first of the Image comics to have a cartoon.
I believe so, yes.
If I'm correct. And it wasn't bad, if I remember.
The Wildcats wasn't one bad. The Savage Dragons. And it's funny, because out of all the books of these, Savage Dragons was one of my favorite.
Mine too.
But the cartoon of Savage Dragon was god-awful. And I think it went for like 22 or something episodes, but...
Did not see any of it.
It was terrible. I remember I stumbled on it. I'm like, I didn't know they made a Wildcats and Savage Dragon cartoon. We had the USA Cartoon Express.
Yes, I remember that.
Nice. It was on that. And I was like, oh my god, this is awesome. I watched it, and I was like, oh wait... Savage Dragon was super violent. Remember what it was cool is it was very comic booky but violent.
Basically, they did to that as to what they did to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They had to kind of sanitize it a little bit.
Except for some reason, they sold. You know, a lot of people didn't know what came before with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so the cartoon was the first thing they were seeing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I had known Savage Dragon, and I was like, "What is this?" He was just like a nice cop, and he was strong, and I was like, "But he's not like breaking people's faces and hands and stuff, you know."
Well, yeah, but I'm glad you bring it up. But you know, one thing they did keep it real: Spawn cartoon kept it real on HBO.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Todd McFarlane's Spawn,
they brought it.
That series still holds up. If you haven't seen it, I'm find it on DVD. You can find it.
Sucks they never really finished the series, but
Kevin, have I seen it?
Did I ever lend you the DVD? I thought I lent you the DVD.
I think you brought it over at one point and tried to make me watch it, but I was kind of drunk at the time.
I remember being a teenager. I'd come home from parties, and it was on HBO, which That's was right. crazy. And I'd be like, eating some cheeseburgers on the couch. My parents are asleep. I'd come home from a party. I'd turn it on, and like Spawn comes on. And I was like, oh, the Spawn cartoon. That's cool. And then I was like, whoa, there's like fucking and murder in this fucking cartoon.
What's crazy, HBO back then, if you wanted to get really dark, you got yourself a taste of Oz and then Spawn.
Yeah.
You really wanted to go to bed just in a really like dark, going to a dark place.
But forgive me, I've probably brought this up before, but one of my favorite things about the Spawn show was the openings would always start. It was like this, it was a very dark show. Mm-hmm. And it was really gritty, really cool. Like I just remember watching in the dark and being like, this is some dark stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it would always open with like thunderstorm in this like dank warehouse. And this is where, you know, it was an animated show, but this was live action. And they'd show Todd McFarlane like at his desk writing, like drawing up Spawn. And he kind of looked like a guy that would draw Spawn. He had like this dark hair, he's a pretty good looking guy, and he's like black leather jacket. So I'm expecting it's gonna be like, hey, I'm Todd McFarlane, I draw Spawn. And as soon as he opened his mouth, it just killed it. I mean, they would go into the show, and the show was great. Hey. But he'd always be like, he'd be like, sometimes when a man is in a dark place, you don't know what you're going to do. Spawn had to figure that out. Hi, I'm Todd McFarlane, and I created Spawn. And I was like, oh, wow, I can't get behind that guy at all. Maybe just draw the funny books, guy.
It's a Canadian accent. Have mercy, man.
It wasn't even that, though. It was just like, you. No matter how cool you can make yourself look, you're still a comic nerd.
Yeah.
And you're still, you know, and God bless him, you know, he's Todd McFarlane. But it was just always funny. Hi, I'm Todd McFarlane, and I created Spawn. And I'd be like, oh, yeah. Can we just get to the show now? Because you just totally made my dick go down.
And if I also may bring up Jim Valentino's Shadowhawk.
Shadowhawk.
That was a beautiful book. That first cover with the foil, the silver foil, outlining the character of Shadowhawk.
Well, and great book. His thing, remember? I don't know if you want to talk what Shadowhawk's niche was he was a vigilante, right? Mm-hmm. And what he would do, so instead of like the Punisher just killing the guy, or instead of Daredevil like apprehending them and leaving, or Spider-Man leaving them for the cops.
He would rape them.
In a way. He'd break their fucking back. He'd break their spines. So they're all paralyzed. So they'd never be able to commit the crimes again. And they'd always remember that, like, yeah, that's Shadowhawk. The guy breaks people's backs.
He'll bang you.
Yeah. Yeah. But the only thing about that, to me was it was too much of a gimmick to me. It was too much of like, well, how many guys' backs is he going to break? There's going to be a lot of fucking paralyzed guys like all around the bad neighborhoods.
Right.
Everybody in wheelchairs like, yep, Shadowhawk.
Yep. Wheelchair mafia, you know, they get together.
Wheelchair mafia, oh my God.
See you rob that convenience store where Shadowhawk patrols. Yep, broke my back.
Yeah. I'm a quadriplegic. What about you?
Yeah.
Well, not too bad. I only lost, you know.
What about you over there?
I am doing well. Everything is cool.
Shadowhawk sucks dick.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. If the Shadowhawk really existed, I think that would definitely clean up the streets right there. That's for sure. If you know you're back.
What are you saying? You want to be Shadowhawk?
No, 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 no.
You
want to
do a Shadowhawk thing? I'm down.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, okay. Now, and I remember now, one of the also one number ones in that I actually liked was Brigade.
Brigade, yes.
Who was that? Liefeld too?
Yes.
But did he write it?
Nerd.
No, I think he farmed that out to someone.
I think is the right. No, I'm such a dick. I'm like, grab that. You can't write with shit. Uh oh to me.
Yep.
No, I just remember Brigade was a cool. They were like the anti-government team. That's what was cool about them. They were like, and of course, all that was one thing too. All the lead guys, like the old guys. If there's ever an old dude in a Liefeld book, they all looked like Cable.
Yes,
I remember it was like Battle Stone or Battle something. It was like the head of Brigade looked just like Cable. It was everybody had the gray hair and the receding hairlines and was gruff and mad.
And let's not forget about Silvestri's Cyberforce.
Cyberforce was a pretty book and a cool book.
Ripclaw.
Yeah. Heatwave, I think. There was like the girl that was obviously like Psylocke. It was Cyblade.
Yeah, Cyblade.
Yeah.
And Witchblade. Can't forget about Witchblade.
Witchblade.
Come later, you know.
You know it was actually one of the best Image books that came later, too.
Prophet
was cool. Prophet came from Youngblood. He spawned from Youngblood.
Yeah.
He was a cool... his look was cool, but I remember...
Well, it brought us Stephen Platt.
Who was it that wrote... Garth Ennis. The Darkness.
Oh, yes,
The Darkness.
Yeah,
The Darkness was the shit, which... Because when you said Witchblade, he spawned from that.
Didn't they do, like, an animated or, like, a short little... live action or something? Or no, it was a video game.
It was a video game and it was amazing.
Right, I remember that.
I never played the sequel, crazy. But the video game itself was real. You were Jackie S. Staccato or whatever his name
is. And you could use the darkness to come out and attack. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah,
I liked that.
And then who did Gen 13 was Image too, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, Gen 13 came a little bit later.
These were like
that was
the
Jim Lee though, right?
Yeah, the art was.
It came from Wildstorm, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, speaking of what, so
Gen 13 was huge.
Yes, it was.
Gen 13 was
that
huge.
That was like
Fairchild.
A teenage book everybody wanted. Yeah, Grunge, I think, was a character.
One of my favorite
there.
Characters, villains, came from Gen 13. Threshold.
Ah.
He was like an evil telekinetic. He would like just like pop people's heads. He'd read their minds and be like, "Do you have what I need? Nope. and just pop their heads and like.
I bought the trade, like the first like so many issues of it, like not too long ago for a couple bucks. Yeah, I was gonna go back and read. Like it's fun. It's literally like sometimes it's a little grueling depending on the book, but sometimes like you go back and you revisit this Image, you know, era. Mm-hmm. It can be a lot of fun, and you can get a lot of this shit for really goddamn cheap, guys. Like right. Really cheap quarter boxes.
Well, that's the thing. It was like they were writing. Even though they were grown men, they were writing for 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
They were, you know, another one that spawned from Gen 13 that I loved was DV8. Mm. They were like this evil team because it was like seeing what the bad guy team was. But you said Wildstorm, which makes me remember that, and you can go over it, all these guys had their own companies.
Yes, everyone except Wallace Portacio.
Right.
Interestingly enough, his book was Wetworks, if I recall.
Right. That was a beautiful book.
Book. But yes, Extreme Studios was Rob Liefeld's company. Top Cow was
Silvestri, right?
Mark Silvestri's company. Shadow Line was Jim Valentino's company. Mm-hmm. Todd McFarlane was just Todd McFarlane Studios. Wildstorm was Jim Lee. And at Highbrow Entertainment was your buddy, Eric Larson.
Right. Right. And as we were saying too, Savage Dragon, to me, was, out of those books too, was the most touchstone of what... Even though all the other ones seemed to kind of be spawning off the X-Forces and the X-Men's, Savage Dragon was, and I think even Larson said it, was like, it was the book that he wrote for, like, people his age. Like, guys that still kind of had the nostalgia for, like, old Marvel.
Right.
But then kind of also wanted something a little grittier. And that's exactly what it is, and it's what it's been. And, like, that
for over 200 issues now.
Insane, which is insane. It's still going.
Yeah, him and Spawn still going.
Yeah.
And two more things, if I can add before you get to this, is that you also had The Pit and Max, which came from other creators who wanted to come to Image, Cam Keith.
And Dale Kewen.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry, you know, I like to be honest on this. I could never get behind the Max, or Sam Keith, for that matter. His art is a particular taste.
It's very distinguishable.
Yeah. Which is good. You want to be distinguishable, just not my cup of tea at all. And that was another one. They had it animated on MTV.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Very popular. And The Pit was awesome. I remember finding that at an antique shop in Strasburg, Ohio, for $5. And I was like, does this guy know what he has? Oh my God. You know, and I bought it immediately. And I was like, Dad, I need $5. Give it to me.
And what we kind of talked about like the impetus for Image, like all those X-Force ones and the resurgence of X-Men. And then these number ones. It flooded the market.
Yes.
So this was the first time...
It helped contribute to a problem that Donald's about to talk about.
I'm going to talk a little bit. More so, actually, I wanted to get this off my chest about when we talked about Supreme. I wanted to talk about the Image ripoffs real quick.
Right.
That these guys seem to not get away from.
There's
like,
a lot of unoriginality.
Right, because they had to hurry up and they decided, we're leaving these big companies. We're leaving DC, we're leaving Marvel. We're going to do our own thing. Well, right. We've got all these stories plotted or all these characters that we were drawing. Let's just go with that, but create new characters.
Or people knew us for these characters.
Right, you know? So they were used to drawing them. So, like, for example, there's a character called Smash, and I don't know if you guys know this character. He is basically the Hulk, but purple with long hair. Looks exactly the same.
Wow.
A guy, when angry, turns into a purple monster. He even used a catchphrase called, matter smash gets, bigger smash gets.
Wow.
And they did not get sued for this shit.
Wow.
Which blows my mind. Even if you look at, like, Maul, he was a ripoff of the Hulk.
He was a skinny
scientist that gets super strength power. The larger... Now, this is the difference. And it's similar but different. The larger he made himself, the dumber he got.
That's right.
And his purple and green colors were very, you know, similar.
Yeah. Right.
Deadlock, which was great, if you remember Deadlock.
Deadlock.
He was a ripoff of Wolverine.
Uh-huh.
He looked exactly like him. The only big difference is he didn't have claws. He just had long fingernails. But he would still cut you like Wolverine would.
Right.
Which was weird.
It was like a saber-tooth-Wolverine combo.
Yeah. Oh, well, here you go. Sabretooth was Warwolf. He was a ripoff. Almost identical in look, except for Warwolf's costume, it appeared to be mainly red. And it might have had a bit more fur, but otherwise it was exactly Sabretooth.
Right.
And then one of my favorites, was Glory.
She was Wonder Woman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a complete ripoff. She was a powerful female superhero who's beautiful, super strong, and has a warrior attitude.
Had a sword
and
too,
is
right?
also the princess of a hidden mystical island inhabited only by Amazons. I shit right. you not.
And actually, you just reminded me of something. There was a character named Roman.
Yes.
Who, I don't know if you know this, Namor spelled backwards
it's an anagram.
Is Roman.
It's an anagram.
Yeah.
Yep.
Is Roman.
Yep.
Roman was pretty much Submariner.
Yes.
I totally
exactly.
remember this. Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. So the unoriginality was rampant in early Image.
Or just like, fuck him. Or it was just like, we're fucking
it could have been. Yeah, yeah. It absolutely could have been. And, but I mean, to tempt fate like that.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Smash? No, thank you. Right. I would have like deviated away from that shit because Marvel was not somebody to be reckoned with. And apparently neither was the rest of the Image group.
Right.
Because I think as we taper down into the second part of what we're going to be discussing in Image Part 2, quickly I wanted to go over what befell Image and how things started to kind of fall apart for right. them a little later on.
And also how it also affected the industry back in the mid-90s.
In the 90s, things couldn't get better until they could. And internet speculation, obviously, I can't confirm or deny any of the things I'm about to discuss,
mm-hmm.
but according to what my research tells me, is that a lot of things went wrong for Image kind of earlier on, but not, you know, they were established and they were making a lot of money, but they were putting out more books than they were selling, and comic book shops were stockpiling the books, thinking, yeah. eventually we're going to sell these.
Mm-hmm.
So the speculation was run rampant. Stock market investors actually got wind of comic books and was like, you know what? This is actually kind of like this is actually kind of like the stock market. We can invest and make some money on this. So they started to do that.
At first, what it is, they wiped out the sports cards market first before they came into the comic book
yeah.
market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they annihilated that.
Had a very similar issue.
And that never recovered, by
nope.
the way.
Which is
never.
Why it's actually funny you mention all this period of time for collecting probably was never bigger.
Nope.
And then at the same time, because of that, there's whole, like, sports cards, sports memorabilia,
Beanie
comic
Babies.
Books, toys. That were like so sought after at this particular time that you probably could have got for crazy amounts of money, are you can't sell now for anything
with very few exceptions.
Yeah, with right. very very few exceptions.
I'm gonna give a quick hats off to Rob Liefeld basically for you know being one of the pioneers of Image Comics and being one of the guys that stuck his thumb to Marvel and DC and said we deserve more, and I agree they did deserve more. There's some things that were said about Rob that weren't the greatest things. And if you look at some of his earlier videos, especially that interview with Stan Lee, he's a likable guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and even he did a video recently called Inking While Driving. It was just a video that he did where he was driving down the road, filming, showing that he was inking while he was driving. And it was 6 a.m. And it was like, I think he said it was like his birthday or something that day. And he's like, this is how dedicated I am. And he was smiling, and you didn't hate him. You weren't like, oh, that prick.
Right.
You were like, oh, this is cool. You know, he just genuinely has this energy to them. So I could see, like, being the Michael Bay of Image, bringing that energy,
mm-hmm.
I could see that. But there were allegations of embezzlement.
Yikes.
Yeah. There were, like, he was using company profits to help pay off personal debt.
Cool.
There were some things like that took place.
There was a 6-year-old he ran over while he was inking and driving.
No, that was the Oxy lady or whatever, the Clarisel girl.
Oh my god.
She ran over a kid, yeah.
Yeah, yikes, yeah. Wow. Yeah, that just brought some shit down.
Right.
So what else did Rob do?
he would poach, like, artists from other divisions of Image. Like, Mark Silvestri decided he was going to leave Image, and he cited Rob Liefeld as the reason. He said he was poaching some of his artists.
You're like, dude, my office is like two doors down from
Michael Turner. Michael mm-hmm. Turner worked under Top Cat,
yeah.
for example.
Rob's company was Maximum Press. He would he He had his own company called Maximum Press, and this was outside of Image Comics.
And then there was also Awesome Entertainment, which is something else.
Right, which came later, I believe.
Right.
He had plans to move titles over from Image, so he was going to actually, it looked like he was trying to take...
Like an exodus?
So he can make more, even more money. But he was hiring Image staff to do, like, promotional and production work for Maximum Press.
That's a big no-no.
Right.
Robbie.
And, like, some of the artists said that they weren't being paid. And then just, you know, stuff like that. Depending on who you talk to, yeah. Rob either was about to get voted out or he just quit.
Right.
You know, obviously, that's one of those things. Some things happened to Todd McFarlane. This is kind of cool, but not cool, I guess, if you're Todd.
What happened to Todd McFarlane?
He lost judgment in two lawsuits in the 2000s. First was in 2002. It was a suit in which McFarlane contested with writer Neil Gaiman over the rights to some supporting Spawn characters.
Right.
Particularly issue number 9 of Spawn, Neil Gaiman created some characters. And Neil's like, look, I created these characters. I should own them. And Spawn, and McFarlane's like, no, you created them in my book. He did exactly.
Which is the ultimate hypocritical and irony of Image.
Right.
Wow, yeah.
So I'm glad he lost that one.
Yeah.
Which was great. So basically, they signed a deal. Gaiman would give his share of characters Angeline, Medieval Spawn and Cuglistro to McFarlane in exchange of McFarlane's share of British superhero Marvel Man that he thought he had purchased.
Mr. Miracle.
In reality,
Miracle Man.
Right. In fact, what he actually owned in reality were two trademarks for the logo.
That's right.
So
I remember he was ready to hold because the whole, I mean, and this is going to be a whole nother podcast, but the whole rights of Miracle Man were so convoluted. But yeah, I remember it was like Todd McFarlane was like, I solved it all. Like, I own it now. It's mine. And then he started to build the groundwork to bring the character back. And it was immediately shut down with this lawsuit. And then it was just, you never heard of it again.
Yep. Until Marvel solved that and they got the rights.
Finally.
But the other lawsuit had to do with a hockey player and him naming the character after the hockey player, not
Tony Twist, right?
Yes, yep. Exactly. So there's that. So there's some things that befell Image earlier on that kind of caused a ripple, and some things weren't working out for them, but they turn it around. And they do that. We'll talk about that in the second half, I suppose.
And there's one last thing we can't forget to mention. They were also a contributor, as we were talking about, to the speculation bust. And also the creation of Diamond Distributors being basically the monopoly of comic book distributors. Because you had so many at the time. You know, you had Heroes World, where Marvel had Heroes World. And then there was also Capital City.
Mm-hmm.
And Image had the opportunity to support Capital City, but chose not to. They chose to go with DC and support Diamond. And this would result in the end of Capital City and just basically the end of any kind of competition within the comic distributor market, where Diamond is now the one and only.
Yeah.
So I guess what you're saying is they're making money. Sorry, I had to redeem myself. Why does it do that little extra one? It's like, and then I'm also still closing the register. whatever.
Well.
Wow. But one thing I will say about Image 2, even... It's funny because in talking about it, all this new memories are coming back to me. But I would always, you know, everybody was there for the Image boom.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, as far as I knew, I was like, they died out. But they didn't die out. I just was like going back to Marvel and DC. But then they would kind of loop me in again. Like I said, like I was there for all the number ones with Youngblood, Cyberforce, Brigade, all those things. And then I was like, oh, okay, Image is gone. And then the darkness comes out, DV8 comes out. You know, there was always...
And there was one thing that could have really sunk the ship there, and that was when Jim Lee decided to leave in 1998 and sell Wildstorm to DC.
I don't know how those guys took that, because that's...
It was a major blow, because before that happened, you have to remember that him and, to lesser extent, Reifeld decided they got contracted work from Marvel for Heroes Reborn.
Yeah.
And they got paid, I think, $3 million for that. So basically, they were so powerful that Marvel was contracting out work to them, and that pissed off McFarlane. And he was happy.
We're going to do a podcast on some of our, what was we said, our least favorite stories, right?
That's one of them. Yeah. That's one of them.
I'm calling dibs on Heroes Reborn. That shit fucking sucked.
That was like the ramifications from the Onslaught story.
It was terrible. And you know what? I think the number one reason why I hated that so much is because it ended Wade and Garney's run on Captain America.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that was very controversial.
Because Captain America's run, if you talk about a writer and an artist hitting their stride on a book, they were full on. Like, they were full on hitting their stride, and people were fucking loving
it. Just in the zone.
They had already made this deal, and they had to let it go, and it ended the run, like, prematurely, and it was just shit.
I just wonder, though, I know business is business, and these guys got to survive, and I'm sure they have families now, but I wonder if, like, guys like Eric Larson and even Todd McFarlane go, like, oh, hey, Jim, hey, Rob, hey, Judas. You know, like, welcome, went back to the big two, huh? Huh? We had something so beautiful. Now I gotta take you out on a boat, Fredo style, and shoot you.
Well, speaking of that, we should take this podcast out on a boat
and shoot it.
And shoot it, because we're gonna get into part two here soon. So, with that, thank you guys for listening.
Please show us some love and subscribe to us on YouTube, iTunes, Instagram, Twitter.
On iTunes, rate and review us, because that's how when people, you know, they know if we're doing good or not.
Right.
Follow us and love us and like us on Facebook.
Yep, Facebook's important. Everything's important.
And more importantly, love us in your heart, you know? Mm-hmm. Just keep us in your heart.
Yes.
And with that, we'll see you at the Comic Shop.